So, Michael, in our first audio, this, by the way, is the second audio.
Oh, yeah, actually, I should have said that. Michael Langford and Regina Dawn Akers, recording number 2.
Yes, all right. So, in the last audio, right towards the end, we were reviewing the fact that thought wishes to continue as the false self, and that it has millions of tricks and thousands of layers of self-deception.
Right.
And I shared a handful of words that I saw that try to keep me from going beyond words. I was wondering if we could talk about some other words, some specific tricks that the ego plays that tries to keep its false self alive.
Right, we might do that. So, as an alternative, this is what I want to suggest, that since there are so many specific ways, so many millions of ways, and by the way, the reason there are so many millions of ways, just to review the reason, why are there so many? Because just think of how many different combinations that thoughts, beliefs, ideas, and concepts, feelings and desires, how many different ways they can form. And of course, that's in the millions. If we name, let's say you and I on this recording name 5 specifics, 5 more, because actually in the last one you gave an example of 5. And I gave a few examples. If we name 5 more or 10 more specifics, what about those millions of preservation strategies we didn't name? So, as an alternative, there's a sort of a general strategy. And that is, if you can see the motivation of a thought, if you can start by not blindly believing in thoughts, whatever your thoughts are telling you, not believe them. Because people go through their whole lives and they believe most of what thought is telling them. And if one didn't believe it, and not believe it means a lot of things. It means also not believing thought is telling you what it's telling you for the reason thought says it's telling you what it's telling you. Just like a used car salesman who tells you things about a car to make a sale that are not true. Thought is not being truthful with humans, because thought has its own agenda, its own motivation, which is to continue its pretense that it is a self, that it is yourself. Its pretense that it is yourself. It is not actually yourself, and it is not actually a self at all. But that is its agenda. Its agenda is to continue. If one can begin to doubt thought and not believe it, almost every ego preservation strategy has something in common, that people are believing their thoughts when their thoughts have a different agenda, a hidden agenda, which is to continue. And so instead of simply talking about specifics, which we can do, but more valuable than talking about specifics, since we can never cover all these, very many of these millions and millions of ego preservation strategies, If as an exercise, someone will try as a practical experiment every day in their lives, not believing their thoughts, not assuming that their thoughts are true, and not assuming that the thoughts are there for the reasons the thoughts say they're there for.
Right.
Suspecting a hidden agenda, like you would a con person who's conning you. A used car salesman is one example of it. Or there are probably a lot of other examples. They're not coming to mind, but they're, you know, of con people. People who are conning other people. If you look at your thoughts as something like that, and be suspicious of the motives and doubt them, and doubt, just say, what if these thoughts are not true? What if these thoughts are not there for the reason the thoughts say that they're there for? Ask yourself, how does this thought perpetuate the ego? Or you could say, what if this thought was actually a way the false identity was preserving itself? What if this thought was one of those ego preservation strategies? If it were, how would this serve that false identity? And to begin to investigate that, then one can discover and see on their own those ego preservation strategies.
Well, I don't know what's happening for the listeners, but as you're speaking, you know, I can see dozens of additional examples just flying by as you're speaking. So if someone was to deeply contemplate even this 7 minutes,
right?
Play this 7 minutes of the audio over and over again and deeply contemplate, each one could probably find many, many ways that their ego is tricking them every day.
Regina, it could be, just consider this, from the time a person wakes up in the morning until they go to sleep at night, in some way, all or almost all thoughts are serving the false identity. Mm. All of them.
Yeah, and then the few exceptions might be, for example, one thought that comes to me multiple times a day now is it has me notice how the previous moment's experience is just in memory and therefore not real. I mean, not like this moment has a sense of reality to it that a moment ago does not have.
Right.
And so it has me continually notice that, but what it also has me do, this thought, is it has me notice this awareness that is constant, that is here all
right.
of the time.
Right.
So several times during the day that thought arises, you know, I call it the check thought.
Uh-huh.
To check, notice, remember what you were doing a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how gone that is.
Right.
Notice you're here. So mm-hmm. there are some thoughts that come, I think, to help us. True?
Yeah, there are some. Even those you have to be careful with. All of the ones that one thinks does, and really evaluate it, because you never want to underestimate how tricky the ego
okay.
is. But I'll give you an example. If someone were open-minded to, since this teaching so far has been about exposing the ego, mm-hmm. If someone were open-minded about that and allowed these thoughts in and were willing to look at that, there's a good chance that a thought which is attempting to discover the tricks of the false identity is really a helpful one and not just another
right,
trick
exactly.
of the false identity.
Yeah.
Now that would be an example
exactly.
of something.
Yes,
that really goes to the core. I'll give you an example of the reason I named that. Instead of something else, the spiritual seeker will say, hey, what about peace and love? peace and love. Peace and love, you'll know what that is when the ego identity comes to its final end. You're going to get some very distorted version of that as long as the ego illusion still lives. So that's the reason why, instead of just going around saying peace and love, peace and love, if you're actually looking to discover the tricks of the false identity, that probably isn't just the false identity if you really pursue it. But even then, you have to just be so careful, because you're dealing with something that almost no human being ever succeeds in dealing with. Because the false identity is that clever. So if one can just, if one can even become interested in exposing the tricks of the false identity, genuinely interested, not thinking one is interested when one really isn't, that old trick, but if one can and then pursue this, yeah, that would be an example of something that is probably a very helpful thought, and not just another trick of the false identity.
So a question one could maybe ask themselves might be something like, if they think a thought is helpful, right? They're looking to see if a thought really is helpful or if it's another trick, a spiritual trick of the ego.
Right.
A question they might be able to ask themselves then is this thought helping me let go of the ego, see through the ego, see that I'm not the ego, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like a spiritual identity, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I want to...
All of those are... Let me tell you, Regina,
sure.
Everything you just said is true, and it is helpful, but it is not on the level of seeing the tricks of the ego.
Okay, help me.
Okay, see, this is a very important distinction. I want to let go of the ego. You see, that's a little bit like peace and love.
Yeah.
you follow that? Yeah, you want to let go of the ego, that's right, but something far more targeted and specific is I want to see exactly what its tricks are, its strategies, exactly how it fools me. Now, that is much more targeted. However, everything you just said is genuinely helpful too.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying about more.
But there's something a little bit more helpful. That's all I'm really saying. If you're really interested in what will help you let go of ego, that really is helpful. But it's about 1% as helpful. And what's as being willing to actually see the ego's tricks. You see?
I see the difference.
There's something about 100 times more helpful, and that's to actually find them.
In fact, now my language is different than your language,
uh-huh.
But what I call what you called a targeted, I call that a prayer.
Uh-huh.
I pray, sort of. I don't really pray to anything specific. It's a heart prayer. I pray to let me see those ego tricks.
Right.
And then something always comes. I start seeing something that I wasn't before.
Sure.
So I suppose it's in the intention, I guess.
Right. Oh yeah, intention is everything. Yeah. Definitely it's in the intention. Intention is everything. And so see, if you pray to see the ego's tricks, you're still interested in...
You have to mean it, yes.
Yeah, but it shows that you are interested.
Right.
So that's the whole thing. But interested in what? Interested in seeing the ego's tricks, which is something specific, and letting go of the ego is a very general thing that has all kinds of other different meanings, which is... It is the whole point. It is the goal. That's the reason you want to see the ego's tricks, is so that the ego can be let go. But these are very, very different in terms of specifics. It's getting praying to...
I don't pray to anything. Some people may, but I don't.
No, praying to see the ego's tricks, asking to see the ego's tricks is a great prayer. It's part of that intention. But that's the thing. This is the thing missing from almost all spirituality. There's almost zero focus on actually seeing the ego's tricks. Or how does the ego's tricks manifest right in spirituality itself?
Yeah.
Right in spiritual teachings. How does it become how do these ego preservation strategies become a part of spirituality itself? And there's almost no teaching in spiritual teachings. It's very rare that they really get into this, you see, which tells you something about those spiritual teachings. It says something about them.
Well, one of the things that you said in audio one, you said, it's rare that humans want to bring the false identity to the final end because of a desire for that which is eternal truth. In other words, it's rare that humans want to bring a false identity to the final end for truth, for truth's sake. I want to talk about that for a moment. Okay, because we know that most people start the spiritual path because they're suffering and they want to stop suffering, or because they want to be enlightened, but their idea of enlightenment is a concept, or some other reason. All right, but truth for truth's sake is a little different. So let me, well, let me tell you something before you speak. Before I came here, you gave me a copy of your spiritual autobiography, Manonasa.
Yes.
And I read that. Uh-huh. And near the end, you talk about Manonasa, or mind death, which is what,
right.
which is what most people, that's what awakening is supposed to mean, right? It's really the same thing.
Sure.
Okay? When I read your description very carefully and very contemplatively, what I found was there was nothing in it that the mind or the personality could want.
Yeah.
Nothing.
You're probably right about that. That's a good point. Yeah, you know, there are 44 pages in the chapter on Manonasa.
Yeah.
And the reason is because this is not something human.
Right.
And so one has to try every imaginable angle to describe something that is completely out of the human frame of reference. But yeah, that's a good point. Let me just pause and think, because I just want to contemplate what you said. It's so funny. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, except for the end of sorrow and suffering. Now, I would say except for
them. For everyone. To a point. I mean, you know, like.
No, but what I mean is that if you say there's nothing that a human could want in Manonasa, yeah, they could want the end of sorrow and suffering. There is at least that. Most of those things, though, yeah, almost no human would want it. That is true, yeah, because humans are attached to this identity. It's the only one that they know. They don't want to end it. So, no, almost no human wants Manonasa, wants to end the ego illusion. Almost no human does. It's the only identity they know. They think it's them. This parasite called thought has been so successful in convincing humans it is the self. They believe it's the self, and they don't want the only self they know to come tune in. So yeah, there is almost nothing that a human would want, except for the end of sorrow and suffering. I think there are a lot of humans who would want that.
Yeah, and in my case, I haven't experienced a lot of sorrow and suffering,
right.
So it's not a huge motivator for me. I can understand how someone who has would be highly motivated by it. Mm-hmm. For me, I have to go into imagination almost and imagine sorrow and suffering. But what was interesting, when I read Manonasa and I saw there's nothing there, and I'm going to use the word I, meaning thought, the ego, the mind, nothing there that I want, I was discouraged from the search for about 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
And that was the end of it.
Right.
Once the 4 hours was over, the encouragement to continue was greater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not anything I can explain.
I want to go back to the sorrow and suffering aspect, and then I want to go for truth for truth's sake.
Okay.
And I want to bring it all together. Now, as far as the sorrow and suffering aspect, that's a perfectly good motivation for all humans, even someone who in this lifetime hasn't experienced that much. And
okay.
Let me tell you why. Because in the trillions of future incarnations, you're going to find out what it's like to be in a war thousands and thousands of times. You're going to have millions of acts of violence done.
Okay, I want to stop for just a second because there's something that they can't see, and that's the seriousness in your eyes when you're glancing at me and saying thousands and thousands of times. So I want to say for the audio, he is looking at me with a deadly serious look. Even though his eyes are usually dancing and laughing when he says, mm-hmm. you're going to experience this, and then he goes thousands and thousands of times.
Right.
There's a seriousness in his eyes.
Yeah, so in trillions of future incarnations, you're going to experience every disease that has ever been known thousands of times over and over repetitively. I don't mean in one lifetime. I mean, one lifetime it'll be one disease, another lifetime it'll be another disease. You'll experience thousands of wars, thousands of acts of violence. There's so many forms. It will get to you eventually. It's just a fact. It's just simply a fact. It's in the nature of things. It will happen. It's just like if I drop this cassette tape holder. Yeah, here we are, on this table like this. It fell. I'm not making it up. In other words, it is going to happen. It is in the nature of things that was going to fall because of gravity or whatever. It is in the nature of things. You will experience it. So it's valid even for you, even if in this lifetime it hasn't been very sorrowful. It's a valid reason for everyone to end the sorrow and suffering. So I want to go into a lot of the other reasons, even though I like that one as a primary one. The not experiencing sorrow and suffering is a good reason for everyone. I still want to go into a whole lot of other reasons for Madhanasa. You see, the false identity is the source of evil. And but that word might carry some meanings that aren't that clear to people, so let me put it in different terms. Unnecessary hurtfulness. Maybe that some people might relate to that better than the word evil. You know, to hurt, harmfulness that isn't necessary. Harmfulness. And it might be sort of a heroic or noble or beautiful or profound gesture to put an end to that which has created 15,000 wars in the last 5,000
years. That I can understand. That I can feel right here.
Yeah. A beautiful, profound gesture. Goodness, that's the word. Not a limited human concept of goodness, not some little narrow moralistic perspective about what goodness is, but the flowering of goodness, where goodness blooms and goodness becomes a flower, and as a heroic, noble gesture, it brings the source of 15,000 wars in the last 5,000 years to a final end, a final end from which it can never come back. The source, right now, as people are listening, a billion people will do acts of violence to another billion people. Right now, today, verbal or physical, they're not all physical, you know, harmful, hurtfulness in some way. To bring the source of all that to a final end, within
oneself.
Oneself, yeah. Because the reason I'm saying within oneself, don't go out trying to bring other people's ego to an end. You, the listener, please don't get involved in that at all. Just focus on your ego, you know, bringing it to its final end. If you can bring the source of all evil to a final end. And that has an inherent value in and of itself, if you can see it. Just that flowering of goodness, that noble act of bringing that evil to an end. That source of all that hurtfulness and violence. So we've covered that, and we've mentioned the sorrow and suffering. But now, there are just still some more reasons.
Continue.
To bring the ego to its final end. The state that humans live in is a delusion, an illusion, something like a waking dream. Not exactly like the sleeping dream, you know, there are differences, but like a waking dream. To not want to live in illusion anymore is a motivation. Different, a little different from the other ones, the sorrow and suffering, and the other one I mentioned about bringing evil to an end. To just not want to live in illusion anymore, to not want to live in illusion, just even for a second anymore. Not for one second to live in illusion, to want that, here's another way to put it. To want to know what the truth is. Not the truth according to a human. Not the truth according to some limited human perspective or idea or finite limited human anything. But to want to know the truth as it has existed eternally before there was ever anything like a human. Or a human perspective. Where there never was a earth or a universe or a star. The eternal living reality. And not, oh, and again, and we haven't really gotten into this much, but not the concept of truth. Not the concept of truth. Not some spiritual or religious idea about truth. Not some human idea about truth. But the reality that word eternal is pointing towards, the living reality, but not the concept of eternity, blah, blah, blah. To want to be free of illusion can be a very strong motivation. You can really want to be free of illusion, you know? To just want truth for truth's sake. That is a little bit like the goodness thing, though. They're a little bit related, you know, because it's very much like wanting goodness for goodness sake. Just goodness for goodness sake is very much like wanting truth for truth's sake, you know. And that is a motivation, a motivating factor. So, there is another one, at least, and motivating factor. We've covered a lot of them. You know, considering that almost no human being on this planet Earth has any interest in Mount Arnasa, you can see how tricky the ego is, because there are a lot of good reasons to go for Mount Arnasa. I've been giving them to you. But, you know, the mind doesn't let it in, you know, usually it won't. But there are rare ones who listening to this are going to let it in, very rare ones. I promise you, there are some. And it's for you. It's for you, folks, you very rare ones who can allow this in. But there is another reason, and that's this. Thought came from the outside, and you existed before it came from the outside. And then thought began calling itself I. And pretended to be yourself. That is the nature of a human. That's what a human is. And you can have a desire to not let that parasite keep pretending to be I anymore. And that is a valid desire. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get some kind of disease and some parasite comes and does this and that to you, you can have a desire to get rid of it. To not want that parasite, which is thought, thinking, ideas, beliefs, concepts, to pretend to be I anymore. To want to get rid of the parasite, that can be a motivation. And it's related to the motivation to want to know your true self. And of course that's related to the motivation to want truth for truth's sake, but this is a little bit different way of pointing towards it. You can just want to know who or what you really are in direct experience. That's a motivating factor. That can be a big one. You know, really, that can be a big motivating factor to just, all right, thought has been lying to me saying that I am a body, that I have a body, that I live on a planet called Earth, that I am these thoughts, these feelings, these desires. Certainly I existed before thought. But if you suspect that human myth is not true, that's not who I really am, just the desire to know, in direct experience, who am I? That's different from the desire to be told conceptually, in words, who you are. In other words, one can say, you're not a body, you're not a mind, you're not thought, you're not feelings, you're not desires. You are infinite, eternal existence, awareness, bliss, that has never known a universe in all of eternity. You are that aware, that eternal awareness. That is what you are. But those are words.
Right.
And those words serve a very good purpose. Because you do kind of, it is important to have some idea where you're headed in this whole thing.
An alternative.
Yeah, and to know that it is a beautiful place, you know, that this is something beautiful, the goal. It's not something, you know, bad. But so it's good to have these as guideposts, but it's very important. Very important to understand. Those are words. And if they remain on the level of concept, and if you, the listener, do what almost every spiritual aspirant does, which is you take everything conceptually, you make a concept into it, and you just keep playing with concepts for the rest of your life, you can read all the spiritual books you want, you can listen to all the spiritual teachers you want, but at the end of your life, you're just going to have concepts and words. So it's very important to see that and to take a genuine interest in the experience that lies beyond all concepts, beyond all words.
And the genuine interest then, some of the symptoms of a genuine interest would be spending time in meditation, catching your ego lying to you, the actual
certainly
practice.
Yes. Because direct experience comes from practice. One of the biggest ego preservation strategies that one finds through so many spiritual seekers is, oh, there's no need to practice. And there's a whole, that's a subject I don't know if we'll even get to on this recording, but that is a subject in and of itself.
Well, one very popular thing nowadays is we're all already awake.
Yeah. So that's the thing. In other words, yeah, that's the misplacing the teachings thing. And so the, I want to make sure that it was nothing else.
Okay, so we're talking about truth for truth's sake and all the
different
reasons.
Yeah, all the different reasons. I think we pretty well covered the reasons.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to know in direct experience who you are. Yeah, yeah, that's okay. I think we covered that point. So back to this misplacing the teachings. So one of the ego's preservation strategies is misplacing the teachings. And now, there's a lot of ways that one can describe misplacing the teachings. You take a teaching that was meant for one purpose, and so, on the subject of misplacing the teachings, there is a teaching, and the teaching is, you already are the true self. You don't have to try to become the true self, because you already are the true self. And this is a true teaching. It is true. The true self is the only reality. And one doesn't have to try to become the true self. There is a way that teaching gets misplaced. The purpose of the teaching, the true purpose of the teaching, was to simply describe the nature of the true self as the only reality, as what you are already, which is all true, to describe the situation, to describe the truth. But how that teaching gets misplaced is then a person says, there's no need to practice. Well, that's right. There's no need to practice to become the true self because you already are the true self. But the purpose of practice never ever was to become the true self. The purpose was to remove the illusion. You're dreaming or you're not dreaming. Practice ends the dream. And that was the purpose of practice. What remains is the reality that has always been. Take a look at how it serves the ego illusion for it to misplace this teaching and get the idea that there's no need to practice. Since practice is 100% essential to remove the ego illusion, look, in fact, it's sometimes these ego preservations are so obvious that if you finally see one that you've never been able to see before, you wonder, well, how could I not have seen it? Because they're so obvious. It is so obvious that since practice is essential...
You said, I want to repeat this, you said 100% essential a moment ago.
Yeah.
I just think that needs to be heard very clearly.
Yeah, yeah. Practice is 100% essential to remove the ego illusion. Without practice, in the history of humanity, no one has ever removed the ego illusion. Now, we can go into that because I know that people think there are examples. People have a different belief according to their study of what has happened in the past. But before we go into that, I just want to say, yes, right, practice is 100% essential, right, 100%. To remove the ego illusion, to bring it to a final end. Practice. And not just any practice. It has to be the most direct practice. It can't be one of the thousands of spiritual practices that were created by the ego illusion for the purpose of perpetuating the ego illusion. But practice is 100% essential to bring the ego illusion to its final end. But it's so obvious. Look. Just assume that that's true for the moment. You, the listener. I'm not saying believe it to be true after the next 2 minutes. I'm just saying for a couple of minutes, let's just, as a hypothesis, let's just assume it, that it was true, that practice was 100% essential to remove the ego illusion. Wouldn't the ego illusion latch on to anything, the ego that wants to... perpetuate its imaginary self that wants to continue to go on and on and on, wouldn't that ego illusion latch on to the idea that you don't need to practice? If practice is something so obvious, so it's not that difficult to get. It is difficult. You'd be amazed. Something, I'll describe it in every obvious way that I can, but it is amazing. It still won't get through. You'll be surprised at how many people won't be able to receive this. But just listen to this. Assume for a moment that it is 100% essential to do practice, certain very effective spiritual practices, in order to bring the ego illusion to its final end. Wouldn't any sort of a concept that would contradict that and make a person believe practice is not necessary, wouldn't an ego illusion that was trying to preserve its imaginary self grab onto that and say, oh yeah, yeah, give me more of this belief that practice isn't necessary? Because it wants to perpetuate itself. It wants to continue. So, actually, you know, I've written some stories. I know that you've read them, Regina, like Two Men in the Well and stories that I've written to try and illustrate this. But I'm not going to tell the whole Two Men in the Well story, but I'll just do something very, very abbreviated. Just give some idea. It's just like this. If you had two men and they owned a piece of property, each owned their own separate piece of property, and one of them was very afraid of water, and he thought about digging a well to reach water, but because he was so afraid of water, every person who came along who offered some idea that indicated he didn't actually have to dig to reach water, he jumped on. He grabbed for it. He grabbed for it because he was afraid of water. You know, some of them told him, you just need to, all you need to do is, your idea of lack of water is lack. You need an abundance teaching. And water will appear on your property. Another says, no, you just need to pray. to that totem pole there, and water will appear. You know, the point is, the story went into a lot more detail, but the point is simply that, of course, everything other than the simple thing, which is dig and you'll find the water, appealed to him because he was afraid of the water. Another man had a piece of property, he simply dug and got the water. It's just as simple as that. But that's this whole idea of you don't have to practice. Practice was never about bringing the true self that you already are. It was removing the illusion. That's what practice was for, and it's just as essential as it always was. But that illusion that wants to continue knows that true practice will bring it to an end. So of course when there's a teaching that comes along that says you don't have to practice, it jumps on it. It embraces it. It's wonderful to that entity, that illusory entity that wants to, that false identity that wants to perpetuate itself, loves this idea. So that's an example of misplacing the teaching. But that's just one specific example. That, you know, there just are so many. It just goes on and on. But that is one specific example.
Well, there are probably other misplaced teachings we could go into, but I think I want to go in a slightly different direction right now.
Okay.
As you know, the idea that we're all awake is something that's out there that's very commonly taught, and there are a fairly large number of people who profess to be awake, right? You, as well as we had Ellie Ruzdar in the Awakening Together Sanctuary on Sunday night, both of you say it's extremely rare.
Right.
Is there anything, it doesn't really matter to me whether someone else thinks they're awake and they're not, so I'm not really asking about them so much. But if they're not awake, then there's some kind of an ego trick that we can fall for. So this is the purpose of my asking.
Sure.
Especially when it's so popular to be awake. How can one not fall into that?
I think that there are a whole number of things to go into as far as that goes. A whole number of things, yeah. So let's go into them. The first thing is that to use a term, a general term, like awakening, almost always serves the ego. Not just for those teachers who are claiming something, but for spiritual students. It serves the ego. Now, before we go any further, I have to kind of cop to something, because otherwise, considering the title of the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, Regina's going to sit there and think, "Oh, thou hypocrite!" So, okay, let me get that elephant out of the room first. But in other words, before you go pointing fingers. So, the seven steps to awakening. Well, this is the thing. If I had called that book The Seven Steps to Mind Death, me and you, Regina, one or two of those jackrabbits out in the desert there, we'd be the four people who'd be interested in reading the book. But awakening is a term people do relate to. And it is true that since humans are dreaming, and since Manonasa puts an end to the dream, awakening is 100% accurate. It's not that it's not accurate, it is 100% accurate. But the problem with the term awakening is it can mean 10,000 different things to 10,000 different spiritual aspirants. It's not a technical, precisely defined term, and the ego loves. It loves it in spirituality when it gets to make definitions. And it, you know when it gets to make definitions? When things have not been precisely defined. So it loves the term awakening, because it can mean anything, anything at all. What does it mean, awakening? Maybe it means one thing to you, but what each individual has their own idea. It's such a general term. It's not a technical term. Manonasa means mind death. It is very specific. Now, I don't mean that the ego couldn't play with that too. The ego can play with anything. If it wants to mess that one up, that very specific thing, yeah, it can mess that one up too. But it's a lot more difficult. mind, death. It's difficult to toy with mind, death, but it's not difficult to toy with awakening. Awakening is like enlightenment. Enlightenment is so general, the term enlightenment, awakening. There are generalities, and the ego loves that generality because it can just define it any way that it wants to. And in almost every human being, the ego is going to define that awakening in a way in which the ego illusion still continues. And in which the universe still continues to appear. It's not going to want to lose the universe that it created. That is its dream. So its dream is going to continue? It's like this. It's like a teaching that instead of awakening from the dream, wants you to awaken in the dream. You see?
Yes.
Manonasa is awakening from the dream. The dream is gone forever. It will never return. That's Manonasa. It's something... But awakening in the dream, I still get my dream. I get to play in the dream now, but as an awake character in the dream. You see, the ego always finds a way to keep its dream and to keep the ego going and to keep its universe. When I say universe, that could mean world, it could mean earth, it could mean stars, it could mean planet. Mostly it means earth, since, you know, that's mostly where human life is. It means still having a body, et cetera, and... all the human dream still gets to be kept. So that's why it likes the awakening, because in awakening it can be defined as something that keeps all of that. So when you talk about people claiming to be awake, I don't actually find that many teachers claiming that. I've heard this statement that people are claiming it, but I wait to hear them actually make that claim. I don't hear many teachers going around saying, I am awake, or something like that. They do implications, imply. They make statements which would imply that. And usually their awakening, there certainly doesn't involve the disappearance of a body or a universe, and often it doesn't even mean that the ego has come to its final end. They've had an awakening experience. And they may be very well telling the truth that they had an awakening experience. You know, the some sort of an experience. I mean, you know, that can be any, since that can be anything, it certainly could be true that they've had some kind of an experience. One in which they have more, a different perspective, let's say.
Yes, like a shift from one way of seeing to another way of
seeing. Yeah, a shift from one way of seeing to another, in which the ego is still very much alive, but it has a completely different perspective now. And it may be very, very radically different perspective in some cases, you know, and so it may be quite a shift. And you can call that or anything you want awakening, you see, and so... But I don't find a lot of people claiming that the ego has come to its final end.
Yeah, well, I did ask a couple of teachers last year directly, and they both were very honest and said, no, that hasn't happened for me yet.
Yeah, that's really more typical. You really don't have too many of that, and that's nice that there aren't a whole lot of those false claims, going around. Certainly there are some. Certainly it's going to happen, but there aren't a lot. So if you... don't use the vague term awakening and talk about the ego illusion having come to its final end, which can be called Manonasa. Nirvana is maybe people now changing the name of what Nirvana is, but historically the Buddha was pretty clear on what it meant, and there's a very literal translation of the word Nirvana, which is extinguishment. And see, that fits in very well with Manonasa, can you see?
Like a candle being blown out.
That was the next word I was going to use, because it isn't just extinguishment, because the next thing traditionally they do to give you the literal translation is to say a candle being snuffed out or blown out, yeah. So you're snuffing out a candle or blowing out a candle, and that extinguishment. Well, that's very targeted, and that's pretty good. Because, you know, just like Manonasa is very targeted. Can you see how the word extinguishment and and mind death are they're pretty close, aren't they? You know, so those are very targeted words. And if you use of course, once you use targeted words like that, you're going to get rid of mass appeal, because human beings want to perpetuate the ego. They don't want ego death. But if you're not interested in mass appeal, and you use a very targeted word like that, and there's not a lot of people claiming that, directly anyway. There are a lot of people who are kind of clever and tricky who are implying it. It's funny, we have a folks, for you listening, there's a peacock in the background here where we are. There happens to be peacocks, and so I said there's a lot of people implying it. Now I don't know if that peacock was implying it or not.
He had some commentary
on the whole thing. So the yeah, so anyway, I guess that was enough on.
Okay,
on
so let me ask another question then. Uh-huh. I don't know if there's anything you can share, because I realize this question is asked going beyond words, possibly.
Uh-huh.
But because people want to be awake, and because there can be dramatic shifts and spiritual experiences that would then allow the mind to grab onto it. How can we help anyone, to be self-honest and to understand, you know, this is not yet awakening?
Yeah, but
okay,
I'm going to correct you there.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I want you to learn from what I just said.
All right.
And this is not nirvana, not mananasa.
Okay.
Because the minute you go back to it, it is awakening.
Okay.
We don't want to correct them that it's not awakening. Awakening means whatever you want it
okay,
to mean.
Okay, let me word it this way. How can I, and any I who's listening who has
I understand your question.
How can I not think I'm done? Fool myself.
I got you. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. How can you not be fooled that this shift that you've had is somehow the finality? Or think that your ego is done when it's not done, or done. Yeah, that's it. No, I understood your question, but I just wanted to just point out to you how consistent word awakening is. You see, because when you go back to that,
I understand. Let me say one more thing. Mm-hmm. That point that you just made is also important, because another thing the mind wants to do is judge, and so we don't want to go out and say, "Oh, he says he's awakened, but he's not. He says he's awakened." It may be good to accept
We may have to go to the next recording for that, because these are two different things. Well, they're both, but I'd like to go into both of them,
you know.
And so.
So let's go into the not being fooled. In this
I hope I can remember now.
I'll write it down.
Yeah,
I'll write it down.
Write it down. So okay, so the first thing that we're dealing with here is how can we know we're not done? Oh, just write down judging this guy is awake and that guy's not awake, and just write that words like that, then I'll know what it is. So okay. So let's go back to this point about
not being fooled about myself
being done. So this is the thing: if you still have a body, the perception of a body, then the ego illusion is not done. If you Now that's going to bring up a whole other thing.
Well, sure. I mean, you're not smoking a cigarette, but I'm tempted to say, I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette.
That's the reason there were 44 pages in Mananaska. Yeah. This is the most incomprehensible thing. How can someone who doesn't have a body be talking to you? You know, that sort of thing. And there were 44 pages to go into in Mananaska just because of that, because it is so hard to conceive of. But this is the fact. Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a good thing to... that's a good way to, Nisargadatta's way of expressing it is a good way to get into it. We probably will get into a lot of this on the next recording, I think.
Yeah, we're running out of time. So we have 7 minutes, maybe 6 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we probably will, because this is a big one. But it is rather simple to answer your question. It's going to bring up a lot of questions in people's mind. If you have the perception of a body, if you still have any awareness of a human body or a world or a planet or a universe, then the ego illusion has not come to its final end.
Okay, so now I want to just remind everybody who's listening, that's the answer to how do I know I'm not fooling myself. If I have a perception of a body, I have a perception of a world, even if there's a more joined feeling.
Right.
Even like yesterday, I was really communing with the bugs. I mean, I was having a wonderful relationship with the bugs, which is very enlightened compared to 10 years ago.
Right.
But there's a body, there's a person, there's a world.
The ego illusion, and incidentally, if people don't like the word ego illusion, there's a lots of different ways of saying it. The false identity.
Me, I'm me.
Yeah, the false identity has not come to its final end.
Right.
The false identity has not come to its final end if there is still the perception of a body, a world, a universe, a planet called Earth. If you can see a tree, if you can see anything, if you can hear anything, if you can taste anything, if you have any perception of a body or anything through the five senses, if there's still a universe left, it is not.
And again, this has nothing to do, if I'm talking about myself here, which I am, this has nothing to do with whether I perceive you, how do I say this? It does have everything to do with whether I perceive you in a body. The point is, I'm not judging whether you're awake or not by me.
Well, that wasn't your question. It wasn't your question. Your question wasn't about that. That's another issue. That was the other question again. No, this is a completely separate question you asked. It has nothing to do with that.
All right.
It's how does the individual know that they're not finished? A completely different question is there any way to know if someone else has or hasn't, or should I be judging them and all that? And we will get
next,
to that.
Next tape.
Probably next tape, because where are we at?
Yeah, we got 4 minutes.
Yeah, because because it took me 44 pages just to... It's such a difficult thing for humans to understand this that... It took me 44 pages to get into it, and I don't mind. We can go into this this whole question, but here's a very simple thing to say about it. Serves the ego well when it's judging spiritual teachers, when it's passing judgment on spiritual teachers, and I'm not against passing judgment on spiritual teachers at all myself. Because passing judgment to me doesn't have the same meaning it does to a lot of people as some big negative thing. To me, discernment is passing judgment, and that's a very good thing. So, but it serves the ego illusion well to think every teacher who has not achieved Manonasa has, or in other words, to put it in those other vague general terms, is fully awake, fully enlightened, who is not, to think that they are. And it serves the ego illusion well to think that those rare ones in whom it has happened, it has not happened to. And that is, we could go into it. It's so obvious why that would serve the ego. And I almost wonder, do I need to say why that would serve the ego well to think that a teacher
Well, if I think, and this is my guess, if I sit here, if I leave this day and say, okay, I spent a whole day with Michael Langford, and I'm absolutely convinced now that he is not awake.
Right.
Well, then I walk away from the teachings. That's how it
That's it. Yeah. That's it. You walk away from it and you miss it. But then if a person goes and thinks someone who has ended the ego has not, and runs after those teachings, then of course that serves the ego, because those teachings are going to help the ego. So yeah, that's the main point of it. The main thrust.
You're listening to the wrong person. Okay, well, I just want to ask you one more question for the record. Are you ready for this? I told you I've asked two other teachers. They answered directly. Are you ready for your answer? Has the ego ended? Has it had its final death in? I don't know how to ask the question, but I'm going to say for you.
That's just it. You know, it will take. It. The answer is yes.
Okay.
But Regina pointed at a body.
Yeah,
and
I didn't
said,
even know that's
no,
the question.
That's it. You see, it took 44 pages just to describe it as so difficult. This is an entire, you know, it would take a whole recording. We may or may not choose to go into it. I'll leave that up to you. But you know, we'll see on the next one. But you know, just to go into this. You see, because it doesn't happen to a body.
Well, I do want to say this. Earlier, when we weren't recording, just during one of our breaks, I asked Michael to consider a question, to contemplate it, to see if he could answer it. And he kind of smiled. It was about some of the ego tricks that he would have experienced, if he could remember them. And he said something like, you know, the person you're asking is dead, or something like that.
That's
remember
right.
what you said?
Yeah, that's right. She wanted to remember back in the seeker is how that one is referred to, and to remember some of the ego preservation strategies in the seeker. used, and so I told her, you know, to try and remember this you know, fictional entity that died such a long time ago, you know, it's hard to even,
yes,
you know, to get it all back.
Yes, and it's time to end this recording.
Right, okay, thank you. And we'll have at least one more recording. We'll see how much time we have, but at least one more.
All right, thank you.